John Bertram in for Steve here on the Steve Gruber Show. I'm on Twitter at Scott Bertram, S-C-O-T-B-E-R-T-R-A-M, at Steve Gruber Show on Twitter for the show. We're joined now by James Polis. He's the executive editor of The American Mind. You can find him on Twitter at James Polis, P-O-U-L-O-S on the last name. And a recent piece he's had in the Washington Examiner, Man-Made Disasters, How Democrats Created Urban Dystopias That Are Crushing Opportunity. James, thanks for joining us here on the Steve Gruber Show.
Hey, Scott, how are you?
Doing well. So dystopia, that's a loaded word. How do you describe these urban centers as dystopias? What's happening there?
Well, so utopia comes from the word meaning a nowhere. It's a fantasy land. So a dystopia is an attempt to create a world that can't really exist and that goes poorly. And that's what we've got in our major cities, especially on the West Coast. You know, I live in L.A. It's turning into San Francisco. And then all those sort of second-tier cities in the West, from Seattle all the way down to Austin, you know, those are turning into Los Angeles. So it's this kind of this rolling blackout of despair that's sweeping through the big cities. And, you know, what's the problem is they promise a kind of autonomy, this kind of fantasy land or candy land, especially to young people who move there. They want the job. They want the cool neighborhood. They want the lifestyle. And instead of having this world of possibilities, they're shoehorned into these tight enclosures of lives that never really pay off on the promise.
You mentioned in the piece, and I've read data on this in the past year or so, that, you know, urban young people are moving, but as soon as there are children involved or they try to start a family, generally they are moving out to the suburbs or elsewhere. Is that a direct rejection of what they have found in those cities generally?
Well, I think, you know, on the one hand, just on a practical level, it's very difficult to raise a family in an urban core these days, just logistically. You know, the schools that you want your kid to go to aren't nearby. You know, quality of life, you know, how many homeless people do you have to step over on the way to grab a coffee? And, you know, the dark part of this is many growing numbers of the homeless on the streets are not just folks who fell on hard times or, you know, could turn their lives around if they get a shelter over their head. These are people who are mentally ill and probably addicted to drugs. And, you know, if you're that mentally ill, you don't really have it together to maintain a heroin habit. You go straight to the mess. So, you know, there are layers of problems here, and it's scaring people away if they want to raise families. And then when they think about, you know, what they'd actually prefer in terms of, you know, space, nature, community, it's just real hard to find them in Urbania.
James Polis with us. Man-Made Disasters, his piece at the Washington Examiner, washingtonexaminer.com. You mentioned Los Angeles. San Francisco is in the news for the wrong reasons. I was in Seattle last year, my first time in Seattle, and I had read the stories previous to going out there about what was happening on the streets of Seattle. It still shocked me. The homeless camps, the tents all over the place, the clearly mentally ill or disturbed people on virtually every single corner, the shouting, the yelling, the tracking down of people walking by. It was real, and it was everywhere in Seattle. What policies in these cities are leading to these occurrences?
Well, you've got zoning issues to start with. You know, there's a big push to do high-density, you know, mass transit-centered communities. Some of this stuff is good, is well-intentioned. I mean, I think about, you know, Mayor Eric Garcetti down here. When he first started out, you know, he had the right idea that if you want to improve a neighborhood, you improve its main street, you make it look a little nice, you know, make sure people want to congregate there. So it kind of started off on the right track, but, you know, this has really been overwhelmed by the idea that big cities need to get the cars out of the cities, they need to cram people into these tight spaces, make them live in mixed-use neighborhoods, you know, stack them on top of new trendy bars and restaurants. And they think that it'll all just work out to the good. And, you know, and that's clearly not what's happening. So you've got zoning issues. You've got, you know, the real estate speculations driving prices up, driving people out of the neighborhood. You know, the way that things are structured is designed to keep folks with families pushed out. And that changes the character of a neighborhood. And then you've got policing problems. I mean, we see this in Portland, another one of these cities where, you know, the police at this point just can't or won't stop, whether it's Antifa or, you know, just general mayhem or people who are truly disruptive and chaotic, from roaming the streets. So you got layers of stuff, and then you got drugs coming in from China, which, you know, directly hits the cities right along the West Coast. You know, there's organized crime going on, even up in a place like Vancouver that's nominally quite beautiful and nice, and it all bleeds through and it's all connected.
Man-made disasters, the piece in the Washington Examiner. James Polis is with us, executive editor of the American Mind and author of this piece. You write, the one-party system of rule that dominates all the megacities has fostered an entrenched form of patronage politics that rewards bloated and protective interests, such as public sector unions, while advancing a nationalized agenda. You later call it essentially boardroom liberalism or woke capital. Are residents in these cities even having a say as to how they are being governed, or do we see the same insiders merely switching roles every 2 to 4 years and pushing forward their agenda?
Oh, yeah, you see that. You see the pipeline. I mean, you know, San Francisco is famous for doing this. You know, you run for DA or something, work your way up the food chain, and then you land in Sacramento or you get yourself a Senate job. It's, you know, it's Kamala Harris track, the Gavin Newsom track. Whereas, you know, ironically, former mayor Willie Brown is writing a column in the Chronicle, and you know, at this point in his life, he can pretty much say what he wants, and he's being quite critical now of these established party monsters on the left who think that they can just continue to rise up the patronage ranks and say the right things and signal the right things to the base and never really be held accountable for what shakes out policy wise.
Toward the end, James, you write, the cultural allies of big city elites insist that this devil's bargain is worth it, essentially due to the economic gains. You say America has become truly reliant on its ultra cities for economic gains. What is the balance here between the humanity that we see on the streets, the problems that we see among people living in these cities, with robust economic activity that occurs there? Can it continue to exist in that way?
I don't think so. Innovation is good and everything, and obviously it's nice when the United States, or if you're a Californian, when California is generating, a good chunk of GDP. But what we're seeing is, smartphones have become a commodity. People just aren't buying new smartphones like they used to. Silicon Valley has some big questions to answer, and tech up in Seattle as well, big questions to answer about where the next wave of innovation is coming from and how much juice you can squeeze out of just putting a computer into a car or into an appliance. How far can you push it? And so the result is California, for instance, has become totally reliant on the massive income tax receipts from the very wealthiest residents and companies. And if that starts to dip a little, the whole economic structure suddenly is thrown into question. And that's not just bad, for people living across the state. But when you're talking about these megacities, they're walking a tightrope here.
James Polis, he's executive editor of The American Mind. You can find him on Twitter at James Polis, P-O-U-L-O-S. And his piece in the Washington Examiner, you can find it in the print edition, of course, but also at WashingtonExaminer.com. Man-made disasters, how Democrats created urban dystopias that are crushing opportunity. James, thank you so much for joining us this morning on The Steve Gruber Show.
My pleasure, Scott. Have a good one.
DTE believes that the energy we all use doesn't have to contribute to climate change. That's why within the next 10 years, we will triple renewables and cut carbon emissions in half. And now, we're announcing a bold new goal: to reach net zero carbon emissions in electric generation by 2050. DTE has long been a leader in clean, affordable, reliable energy. And leaders don't just do what's easy, they do what's right. DTE.
At DTE, we're committed to using our energy to serve and transform communities, helping to create a brighter future for us all through projects like building parks, partnering with schools, job training programs, and volunteering our time to those in need. Because at DTE, we believe we have a responsibility to serve our customers and our communities. Learn more at dteimpact.com. DTE.
So, you're finally ready to lose weight. Maybe it's so you won't need medication for diabetes, blood pressure, or high cholesterol. Or maybe it's just to look and feel better. Whatever your reason, MyPureHealthSolutions.com can help. MyPureHealthSolutions.com will customize a weight loss program designed specifically to tackle the hormonal imbalances that cause you to be overweight. It's a program that can be done anywhere, on any schedule. Learn more today at MyPureHealthSolutions.com. MyPureHealthSolutions.com. That's MyPureHealthSolutions.com.
Some high school game officials get involved because they decided it was time to stop complaining about the referees as a spectator and become one. They found it to be a rewarding and humbling experience. We always need more officials. To get involved, go to MHSAA.com. There's help wanted, just whistle. A message from the Michigan High School Athletic Association, promoting the value and values of educational athletics.